Frank rode into town just after dark, stabled his horse, and walked over to the jail. Jerry had fed the prisoners after Doc Bracken made his daily visit to check on the wounded. A fresh pot of coffee waited for Frank.
Didn't expect to see you back this early, Frank.
I looked over the entrance to the pass. Decided this was not a good day to die. The place is a death trap.
The south entrance sure is. The best way in is from the north.
We don't have any authority up there. I wonder why Colorado won't deal into this game with us.
I don't know if they've ever been asked.
I know there's a few small towns just north of the border with us, on the edge of the Badlands. But Pine and Van Bergen are smart. They don't pull anything up there, so they're not wanted in those areas.
It was a policy slowly dying in the West. For many years, if a man was not wanted in a specific area or community, the local lawman would, in many instances, leave him alone, as long as he did not cause trouble within that lawman's jurisdiction.
Was either the mine owner or the foreman married?
Yes, both of them. Wives are here, but neither of them have kids.
That's good. That is, if anything about this mess can be called good.
What about this Charles Dutton fella, Frank? I just don't like that uppity bastard.
Neither do I, Jer. I think something is going to break loose here in town very quickly now.
Because this Dutton dude is here?
Yeah, and Big Bob Mallory, and Kid Moran, and those four assassins who came after Viv and me, and all the rest of it. Dutton is tied in with it all, I'm sure of it. I just don't know the big picture yet.
This is getting mighty complicated, Frank.
Fella named Sir Walter Scott wrote some verse once that went something like, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave." I don't remember the rest of it, but that much did stick in my mind.
This mess sure is all tangled up, for a fact.
Marshal, sorry to disturb, but I thought you ought to know Kid Moran is back in town. I was using the privy, just stepping out, that is, when I seen him coming down the back way of the hotel, using them steps lead up to the fancy rooms. He was sort of slipping down them real quiet-like, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Marshal, for sure. If I see anything else suspicious-like I think you should know about, I'll get right over to you with it.
Thanks.
What was that all about?
Charles Dutton has the most expensive suite in the hotel rented for his stay here.
You think he's tied in with Kid Moran? A fancy Dan rich man like that?
It wouldn't surprise me any. Way this situation is shaping up here in town, nothing would surprise me anymore.
What was the line you recited? What a tangled web we weave. I knew several families named Scott back home when I was a kid. One of them was always quoting that fella Shakespeare, like to have drove the rest of us goofy. You reckon they might be related to that poet?
The next morning, Frank took a good bath, then carefully shaved. He blacked his boots and dressed in a new suit. No special occasion. He just felt like putting on some fancy duds. He stepped out into a beautiful day in the high country. A blue, cloudless sky and a warm temperature. He walked up to the Silver Spoon and took a seat, ordering a pot of coffee and breakfast. Kid Moran was seated across the room, staring at him, smiling at him. The kid took no part in the attempted kidnapping of Conrad and the killing of Hal, at least no part that could be proved. Kid Moran could come and go as he pleased. Frank ate his breakfast and drank his coffee, ignoring the kid. The kid left the cafe before Frank, walking across the street and sitting down on a bench. Angie came to Frank's table to clear off the breakfast dishes.
Be careful, Frank. There's something in the wind this morning.
What do you think it is, Angie?
Killing you.
You a fortune teller? Maybe you can see the future.
Joke if you want to, Frank, but I've served half a dozen hard cases breakfast this morning.
Sometimes it's difficult to tell a hired gun from a drifting cowboy, Angie.
And sometimes it isn't.
She refilled his coffee cup.
You watch yourself today. This town's become a powder keg and the fuse is lit.
She turned to leave and Frank put out a hand.
Angie, what is it you're not telling me?
Nothing I can prove. It's just a feeling I get every now and then. But over the years, I've seen the best and the worst out here. I saw Jamie McAllister go into action once. I've seen his son Falcon hook and draw. I personally know Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont. I've been working in Western Cafe since I was 10 years old. And I'm no kid, Frank. I've got more than a few years behind me. You just be careful today, all right?
All right, Angie.
Frank looked out the window. The kid was still sitting on the bench across the street, staring at the cafe. Frank paid his tab and stepped out onto the boardwalk. None of his mental warning alarms were clanging that morning, so what did Angie feel he didn't? And why? The kid was in town, probably trying to provoke a showdown with him. That was something Frank felt all along was bound to happen. No surprise there. And it might well come to a head on this day. So be it. The hard cases she mentioned? Did she personally know those bad old boys or just recognize the hard case look? Frank walked one side of the main street, looking at the horses at the hitch rails. There were some fine-looking animals there, and none of them were the same brand. But what did that prove conclusively? Nothing. Nothing at all. Frank cut his eyes. Kid Moran was pacing him on the other side of the street. Maybe it was time for Frank to settle this thing. He hated to push it, but damned if he was going to put up with being shadowed indefinitely. It was already beginning to get on his nerves. He looked up the street. Damned if more newcomers weren't pulling into town. Two wagons coming in, four outriders per wagon. That was odd. Most Indian trouble was over. So what could the newcomers be hauling to warrant eight guards? The wagons weren't riding that heavy. Frank paused for a moment to watch the wagons as they rolled slowly into town. One wagon stopped at one end of the street. The other one rolled on and stopped at the far end of the main street.
What the hell?
Frank looked over at the bank building. The guard was just unlocking the front door, getting ready for another business day as a citizen strolled by Frank.
Morning, Marshal.
Morning.
Frank looked at Kid Moran. The kid was standing on the boardwalk, directly across the street, staring at Frank, smiling at him. Even at that distance, Frank could tell the smile was taunting, challenging.
What the hell is with you, boy? What's going on here?
Jerry walked up, smelling of bath soap and bay rum aftershave. Frank greeted Jerry, but kept his eyes on Moran.
Jerry?
Frank, you're looking spiffy this morning. You're dudeed up mighty fancy.
And you smell like you're going on a date. You got a lady friend?
Well, me and Miss Angie might go for a walk this morning. We've both been making goo-goo eyes at each other here late. She's a nice lady.
Yeah, she is. And a damn good cook, too.
I know.
Gonna get serious, Jerry?
I don't know. Maybe. Luckily, we're both adults and been up and down the road a time or two. It isn't something new to either of us, so we're cautious.
Jerry paused, looking at the wagons just into town.
What the devil are those wagons doing, Frank? Looks to me like they're going to block both ends of Main Street. My God, they are blocking both ends.
Frank looked first at one end of the street, then the other. The wagons were not long enough to completely block off the wide streets, even with the teams, but it looked as though they were sure going to cause some major problems for other wagons trying to get past.
Frank, they're folding back the canvas on both wagons. Heck, maybe it's some sort of circus come to town or some minstrel show, you reckon?
I don't know what's going on, Jer, but I damn sure intend to find out.
I'll take this end. You take the other.
Marshal Morgan, what in the world is happening? Those wagons are blocking the street. That can't be allowed.
We were just about to straighten out this mess, Jiggs.
I swear, Marshal, some people have no considerations for others, do they?
Frank, what is that machinery those guys are uncovering? I never seen no mining equipment look like that.
Frank looked and felt cold sweat break out on his face. He blinked, thinking he was surely mistaken. He stared. No doubt about it. His first look was correct.
Those are Gatling guns, Jerry.
Gatling guns? Good God, are you joking?
He stared at first one wagon, then another.
By the Lord, you're right, Marshal. What are those people going to do? Put on some sort of demonstration?
A huge cloud of dust enveloped the road leading out of the main street and up to the mines. The power of the explosion cracked windows and sent some people stumbling off the boardwalk and into the street.
Dude, the road's blocked!
The dust cloud flowed over the main part of town, covering everything. The men in the wagons began cranking the Gatling guns. Lead rained terror up and down Main Street. Several men and women were hit and spun by the gunfire. On his belly on the boardwalk, Frank watched as half a dozen men, all carrying guns and cloth bags, entered the bank.
Bank robbery!
Frank rolled off the boardwalk and into the street. Just as the carriage from the Browning estate turned onto the main street from a side street, Frank could do nothing except stare in horror as a dozen rounds of lead raked the carriage. Vivian was knocked out of the carriage to lie still and bloody in the dirt. Frank snapped off a lucky shot, hitting the gunner in one of the wagons in the shoulder, knocking him back. In a heartbeat, another man took his place, cranking out lead and death in all directions. Frank tried to get up and make his way back to Vivian, but the intense fire from the Gatling guns forced him back. He crawled behind a water trough as the bullets howled and whistled all around him. Frank glanced over to where he last saw Jerry. The deputy was all right, taking shelter in a store, returning the gunfire as best he could whenever the hail of bullets ceased for a few seconds. All the stores up and down the street on both sides were missing windows. One of the bank clerks staggered out of the bank, his chest bloody, and fell face down on the boardwalk. A young child, a girl, sat in the dirt beside her fallen mother and cried. Many of the horses tied at hitch rails in front of various stores broke loose and bolted. Others, badly wounded, screamed and thrashed on the ground, unable to get up. While the gunners changed magazines on the Gatlins, Frank dropped one of the outlaws, exiting the bank with a bag full of money. Jerry shot another one leaving the bank. He fell back against the front of the bank building and lay kicking, jerking, and trying to push words out of his ruined throat, the bag of money beside him forgotten in his horrible agony. Frank rolled away from the trough and under the raised boardwalk, squirming his way a few yards closer to one of the death wagons. He shot the gunner in the head just as another charge of dynamite was lit and tossed. The barbershop exploded in a mass of splintered wood and broken glass. The peppermint-painted barber pole was blown 100 feet into the air. It came down in the alley behind the barbershop and landed on the slant roof of a privy, crashing through and almost conking a man on the head as he took refuge there.
Holy shit!
Jumped out of the privy and took off, running toward the edge of town. More dust, smoke, and confusion covered Main Street. The Gatling guns spat misery and destruction again. Frank nailed another outlaw coming out of the bank, his shots turning the robber around and around in a macabre dance on the boardwalk. He dropped his bulging sack just before he slumped to the street and died beside the bag of money that cost him his life. Frank heard a shotgun boom inside the bank. An outlaw smashed through the big front window, dead from the shotgun blast before he hit the boardwalk. Frank jumped up and ran closer to one of the wagons. He made it to a dead horse and jerked the .44-40 rifle from the saddle boot. Before he went belly down on the ground, he chanced a look toward Vivian. She wasn't moving. Frank felt a terrible rage. He levered around into the chamber of the rifle and sighted in the new gunner cranking the Gatling gun. Frank shot him in the chest and knocked the man out of the wagon. No new gunner came forward to take his place. The bank robbers were running out of men. Frank ran toward the wagon and jumped in. He swiveled the Gatling and began cranking, the rounds literally tearing the wagon at the end of the block to splinters, all mixed in with the blood and shattered bone of the two outlaws inside the wagon. The remaining outlaws, not dead, wounded, or being held prisoner by various townspeople, rode hell for leather out of town toward the pass. Doc Bracken was busy working on the wounded citizens, pointedly ignoring the calls for help from the wounded outlaws.
Help me, Doc!
Go to hell, you bastard!
Doc Bracken didn't look up from the bloody little girl he was working on in the middle of the street.
I'm hard hit, Doc!
Good! Go ahead and die. Rot in hell.
Frank hurried over to Vivian and knelt down. She took 2 rounds in the chest from the big boar Gatlins, but was still breathing.
Hang on, Viv. Doc Bracken's coming over as soon as he can.
Tell him not to waste time, love. I'm all torn up inside.
Hush now, Viv. Don't talk like that.
Talk while I have time to talk. I'm in no pain, Frank. It's all numb inside of me. It's difficult to breathe. I've been a long shot, haven't I?
Frank saw the pinkish-looking fluid she'd coughed up.
I don't know for sure, Viv.
I think I am. Let me talk while I still can, Frank. Don't interrupt, please.
I won't, Viv.
You own 5% of Henson Enterprises, Frank. I saw to that just last week. The papers are filed, and it's all legal. Dutton can't do a thing about it except gripe. Money will be deposited in your name in a bank in Denver every month. It's all spelled out in the papers. Mayor Jenkins has them. He's a good, trustworthy man.
Frank waited while Vivian coughed up more fluid. It was pinkish in color. Holding her, he felt his hand at her back grow wet. He lifted one side of her jacket and found another bullet hole. He knew unless the slug veered off, it probably shot right through a kidney.
Is the sun going behind a cloud, Frank?
It's getting darker.
Yes, love. Clouds are moving in. It's going to rain, I reckon.
There was not a cloud in the sky. Doc Bracken came over and looked at Vivian for a few seconds. He lifted his gaze to Frank and shook his head. Frank saw in Doc's eyes the night of death stealing the sunlight of Frank's life.
Look after Conrad, Frank. Promise me you'll do that.
I will, Viv. I promise.
He's home right now. I gave him a sedative. He probably slept through this horror.
I'll do my best to take care of him, Viv.
Bracken placed a cloth over Viv's major chest wound.
Stops the sucking, Frank. She might have a chance.
Bracken waved some men over. They gently picked Viv up and carried her away. Frank stood up and looked around him. The main street of town resembled a war zone. There were at least 2 dozen men, women, and children dead or wounded. There wasn't a window left intact. The barber shop was gone. The buildings on either side of it heavily damaged. Jerry walked up, a bandage on his head.
You hurt bad?
Nah, just conked on the head by a flying board. Bled like crazy for a few seconds. Angie thought I was hurt bad. How's Mrs. Browning?
Real bad. She caught 3 bullets in the chest.
I'm sorry, Frank. Jimmy?
Dead. That's him between the seats in the carriage.
Driver's dead, too. He's on the other side of the carriage.
Let's go see what we can do to help and get the prisoners over to the jail.
We might have some trouble keeping a lynch mob from taking the prisoners.
I couldn't blame him for trying, but that's not gonna happen in my town.
Frank and Jerry rounded up the surviving outlaws, marched them over to the jail, and locked them down with Jerry in charge. Frank left the office and walked up to a group of businessmen.
You're all deputized. Your job is to stay at the jail and guard the prisoners. You will prevent a lynching. Is that understood? Fine. Get over to the jail and relieve Jerry. Tell him I need him out here now.
Moments later, Jerry was at his side.
Let's get a tally of the dead and wounded. You start that while I find Jenkins and see how hard the bank was hit.
Will do, Frank.
Men were shooting badly injured horses, putting them out of their misery.
I didn't get away with a nickel. We recovered every dollar. Now, how many dead do we have?
I don't know yet. Jerry's checking on that now, but it's going to be high.
And Mrs. Browning?
Doc Bracken said she was still alive, but unconscious. She's hit hard.
Was it the Pine and Van Bergen gangs that hit us, Frank?
Yeah, selected members. The rest of the gang was scheduled to pull something else.
Oh, for God's sakes, what and where?
The one doing all the talking didn't know, or said he didn't.
You believe him?
He's pretty damn scared, Mayor. There's a chance he's telling the truth.
A citizen ran up to the men, nearly out of breath.
We've got over 20 dead so far, Mayor. Marshal, about that many wounded.
Oh, dear God. How many of the wounded are critical?
Nearabouts all of them.
All right, mister. Thanks. Go sit down over yonder and catch your breath.
No time. One of the dynamite charges was tossed into Miss Rosie's place up on the hill. Some of her girls are still buried under the rubble. Maybe 8 or 10 of them. And Miss Rosie's missing too.
Oh, Lord Jesus. Now, my wife's been griping and raising hell about that whorehouse for months. She wanted it gone, but not this way.
Frank swung into the saddle of the first horse he came to and rode up to Rosie's House of Delights, or what was left of the place, picking his way around the blocked road. There were dead and badly injured soiled doves on both sides and in front of the ruined old two-story home. There were plenty of men helping to search for and dig out those trapped, so Frank rode on. No one thought to look for dead or wounded at the small mining claims dotting the area around the town. Frank had a hunch that was also part of the gang's plan. Many of the men working the smaller mines found pockets of gold and did not trust the bank to hold it for them. They kept it in hidden places around their shacks. Ned Pine and Vic Van Bergen would have spies working the town, buying drinks for thirsty miners, and would know some of the producing claims.
Wheels within wheels.
Frank's worst hunch paid off. The roar of the Gatling guns, the booming of the dynamite, and the screaming of the wounded managed to cover the sound of the attack on a number of the small mines. The attacks were especially vicious. There were dead men and women nearly everywhere Frank looked. Frank found one dazed but unhurt young man.
You have a horse, boy?
Yes, sir.
Get on it and ride into town. Tell my deputy what's happened here.
Frank stared at the confused-looking teenager.
You understand what I just told you?
Huh? Yes, sir.
Move, boy.
Frank did what he could for the wounded and waited for help from the town to arrive. Soon, Jerry rode up with about a dozen men. For a moment, they sat their horses, staring in disbelief at the carnage.
Couple of you check out those mines up ahead for dead and wounded. Rest of you get down and help me identify these bodies.
Telegraph is out too, Frank. I guess the gangs pulled down the wires just as they were hitting the town.
It was sure a well-thought-out plan, Jerry. No doubt about that.
They didn't care who they killed. I never seen anything so vicious.
The death count's still rising?
Yes, by the minute. A lot of women and kids were killed. Most of the stores on Main Street were damaged. Several of them be closed for a long time.
Some of them probably won't ever reopen. God, look at the bodies.
We're gonna have to match up the names of some of these people with records from the assayer's office.
We'll be lucky to match up half of them. Jerry, did you see Kid Moran do anything to aid the outlaws?
No. Not a thing. And he's gone. So is Big Bob Mallory.
Figures. How about Charles Dutton?
I guess he's still in town. I haven't seen him.
Any chance of getting Doc Bracken up here?
Not a chance, Frank. He's operating fast as he can, and the wounded keep piling up. He's moved his operating to the church building on Willow Street.
All right. See if you can get a couple of wagons. We'll move the wounded into town.
How about the bodies?
I guess we'll have to leave them where they fell for the time being. Let's see the living first.
Frank, I haven't seen Conrad Browning.
Vivian told me she gave him a sedative this morning. He slept through the attack. I'd better go and check on him, get him up and moving. He might not get another chance to see his mother alive.
Don't give up on her, Frank. She's a strong woman with a powerful will to live.
She took 3 rounds to the chest, Jer.
But she's still alive.
Yeah. Take over here, Jer. I'll be in town.
Frank rode into town and checked on Vivian. She was still clinging to life. He went to the Browning estate and got Conrad up and moving. He made coffee while Conrad washed his face and dressed. Then he told him what happened. The young man went white in the face with shock.
Mother?
She's still alive.
Take me to her, Marshal.
Of course.
Frank took Conrad to the doctor's office, where a local woman, Bracken's nurse, sat with Vivian. A very subdued Conrad took a chair by his mother's bed, reached out, touched her, and finally took her hand into his. Frank slipped outside, leaving the mother and son together. He stood alone for a few moments, then carefully rolled a cigarette and smoked it, but he got no pleasure from it. The tobacco was bitter tasting on his tongue. all mixed up with the lonely feelings of sorrow and regret for himself, for Conrad, for Vivian, and forcing himself to admit it, for all the things that might have been and now could never be. Never, ever be. Jerry rode up and dismounted, walking over to Frank.
How is she, Frank?
Doc Bracken said there's no hope, Jer. Conrad is in there with her now.
How's he holding up?
Being a very strong and brave young man. But I don't think that's going to last for any length of time.
They were real close, weren't they?
Yeah.
Frank, I hate to bring this up now, but I got to. We got 42 people dead and 70 wounded, some of them real serious. We can't get word out. The telegraph is down, and the road is blocked by the outlaws about 3 miles out of town.
What?
They want the money in the bank, Frank. All of it. We just got word. And they know to a penny how much Jenkins has in his bank.
How the hell could they know that?
One of the tellers was involved. Young man named Dean Hill. His girlfriend came to the office and told me about him. She's over there now, wants to talk to you.
All right. Where is this Dean Hill now?
He rode out with the survivors of the holdup.
I'll make you a wager. If he isn't dead by now, he will be very shortly.
No bet. Those outlaws damn sure aren't going to share with him.
Let's go see this girlfriend. Not that she'll be able to tell us much. How long do the outlaws think they'll be able to keep the pass closed?
Forever, Frank. She told me they plan on warning anyone wanting in. There's a smallpox epidemic in town. No one's allowed into town.
Pretty good plan Vic and Ned worked out.
Yeah. What are you gonna do, Frank?
See this girl. Then I'm gonna open the road or die trying.
Frank talked briefly with the frightened young lady in his office. She told him basically what she told Jerry.
What do you suppose will happen to Dean?
Frank didn't want to tell her. He was probably already dead.
He'll have to stand trial, miss. I don't know what the judge will do.
The young woman left.
If he is alive, he'll spend the rest of his life in prison.
Frank turned to Jerry.
Have a wagon hitched up. Transfer one of those Gatling guns over to it and fill all the magazines.
Jerry looked at him.
And some dynamite and caps, too.
Sounds like you're about to declare war, Frank.
I am, Jer. For a fact.
Jerry left the office quickly, and Frank began putting together some gear. He was filling the empty loops in his ammo belt with .44-40 cartridges when Mayor Jenkins came in.
Coffee over there on the stove, Mayor. It's fresh and hot. Help yourself.
Good.
Jenkins reached into his suit coat and pulled out some papers.
While I'm doing that, you sign these where I put her next, right here.
What am I signing?
Oh, some very important papers.
He pushed a pen and inkwell across the desk.
Sign them and date them.
Frank scrawled his name, looked at the calendar and printed in the date, then pushed the papers away.
Oh, I just spoke with Dr. Bracken, Frank. There's no change in Mrs. Browning's condition.
I know.
Doc Bracken's worried about Conrad, though. Boy's real shaky.
He's learning that death is a part of living, Mayor. The kid is tougher than most people think. He'll be all right.
Now, I know you're about to do something. You want me to put a posse together, Frank?
No, this is something I have to handle myself. We've lost enough innocent life already this day.
One man against two large gangs?
If I decide I need help, Mayor, I'll send word back. What I would like for you to do is officially deputize some of those men guarding the prisoners. They can take care of the town. I want Jerry with me at the blockade.
I will do that immediately.
Thank you.
Be careful, Frank.
I won't promise that, Mayor.
Jenkins smiled his understanding, nodded his head, and picked up the papers.
I'll send over your copies in a few days. I want to have these recorded.
Frank finished filling the loops in both gun belts, .44-40 and .45, then filled up a large canteen with fresh water. Jerry walked in about the time he was finished.
Got the Gatling gun loaded, Frank. Several cases of filled up magazines.
Dynamite.
Enough to blow up a mountain. You ever handled dynamite?
Plenty of times. One more thing. Go over to Angie's and tell her to fix us some sandwiches to take with us.
On my way.
Frank stowed his rifle and canteen in the wagon outside the office and looked over the team. Good, powerfully built horses. Doc Bracken walked up. Frank guessed the doctor was taking a much-needed break from his patients.
Mrs. Browning is drifting in and out of consciousness, Marshal. She wants to see you. You better come now. I don't believe she can last much longer.
Frank walked over to the doctor's office and pushed open the door leading to the tiny clinic. Conrad was sitting by his mother's bed. He looked up at Frank.
I'll leave you alone for a few minutes, Marshall. Then I'll be back. I have something to say to you.
All right, son.
I am not your son.
Yes, you are.
Conrad whirled around.
What did you say, Mother?
Frank Morgan is your father.
Mother, you don't know what you're saying.
Mr. Browning knew you weren't his own son, but he raised you as if you were. Frank and I were married in Colorado right after the war. I was pregnant with you when your grandfather drove him away.
Conrad stared at Frank for a moment, then charged out of the office. Frank sat down in the chair beside Viv's bed and took her hand.
I guess he had to know, Viv.
It was past time.
You're gonna pull through this, Viv.
No, I'm not, Frank, and you know it. I can read that in Dr. Bracken's eyes, and yours.
Frank didn't know what to say. He held her hand.
Listen to me, Frank, please. I don't know how long I'm going to stay conscious. I don't want you to see me die. I don't want that to be the last memory you have of me. I don't want that image to be the one you carry in your mind for the rest of your life. Do you understand that?
Of course I do, Viv.
Promise me you'll take care of Conrad. Promise me you'll try to see him into manhood.
I'll try, Viv. I'll do my best, if he'll let me. But if he won't, what can I do?
Try. Just try. That's all I ask.
Vivian closed her eyes, and Frank thought for a few seconds he lost her. Then she took several ragged breaths and once again opened her eyes.
Did you sign the papers Jenkins brought over to you?
What? Oh, yeah. I signed something this morning. He said it was important.
They were very important, Frank. Thank you. How's Jimmy?
He's dead, Viv. So is the servant.
I'm so sorry. What a mess. It was a bank robbery, wasn't it?
Yeah, they tried to rob the bank. They didn't get away with a nickel of the bank's money.
She stared at Frank for a moment.
You're going after them, aren't you?
It's my job, Viv.
Frank?
I'm right here.
I never stopped loving you. I want you to know that.
I never stopped loving you, Viv.
I'm awfully tired, Frank. And I'm at peace. I really can't describe it.
Viv!
Try to look after Conrad, Frank, will you? Remember, you promised.
I'll do my best, Viv.
Vivian closed her eyes.
Viv! Viv!
Conrad burst into the room, the nurse right behind him.
Both of you, get out, right now. Move!
Conrad confronted Frank in the outer office.
I don't care what Mother says. You're not my father.
But I am, boy. She spoke the truth. Let me tell you what happened.
I don't want to hear anything you have to say. It's all a pack of lies.
Frank checked himself before he could strike the young man.
Your mother is not a liar, boy.
Of course she is. If what you say is true, she's lied to me for years. Deny that. You can't, can you? No, because it's the truth.
If you'll just let me try to explain, Conrad.
I hope to God I never see you again. All this tragedy is your fault. It never would have happened if you hadn't showed up here.
Frank struggled to grasp the logic in the young man's illogic. What did his coming to town weeks back have to do with an attempted bank robbery? He shook his head.
Conrad, you're not thinking straight. I just want you to know.
I don't want to hear anything you have to say. I just want you to leave. I don't wish to ever see you again.
Boy, I made a promise to your mother that I would take care of you.
You take care of me? Oh, I think not. Get out and leave me alone.
Frank stared at his son for a few seconds.
All right, boy. But I'll be back. Count on that. We'll talk more.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
The nurse walked into the room, dabbing at her eyes.
When have you go get Dr. Bracken? Hurry.
Mother?
Fading very fast. Hurry, boy.
Conrad ran out of the office.
Is she conscious?
No. My God, this has been a horrible day.
Yes. Certainly has been that.
The nurse gripped Frank's arm.
Kill those outlaws, Marshal. Kill every one of them. Avenge this town.
I plan on bringing them to justice, ma'am.
No! Kill them!
The nurse looked at him for a moment, then turned away, walking back into the tiny clinic of Dr. Bracken without another word. Frank touched the butt of his pistol.
Yes. I plan on delivering justice, ma'am.
Frank headed for his office. Jerry was waiting on the boardwalk.
Is Mrs. Browning?
It won't be long, Jerry. You ready to go?
Ready. I put the sandwiches in the wagon.
All right, you drive the team. I'll follow with our horses. What's the latest on the death count?
Still climbing.
Let's go even the score.
About half a mile from the blockade, Frank left Jerry with the wagon and rode up to take a very cautious look-see, walking the last 100 yards and peeping around the sheer rock wall on the left side of the road. The Pine and Van Bergen gangs blocked the road with a heavy chain stretched across it, then stationed 2 wagons, tongue to rear, in back of that. 2 red flags on poles in front of the chain signified danger, and 4 men with rifles were on guard.
Slick. Very slick.
He looked up and shook his head. No way to get above the blockade, for the sheer rock face was several 100 feet high. Any assault would have to be a frontal one. Frank guessed the main body of the gangs was camped not far off. They would come running at the first sound of trouble. It had been suggested to Frank a rider from town try to make it through the outlaw pass. He had smiled at that and asked for volunteers. They dropped the suggestion when no one stepped forward. Frank rode back to Jerry now and swung down from the saddle.
One way through, Jer.
Straight ahead, right?
That's right.
They're gonna hear the wagon when we move it into place, for a fact. But what the hell? Surely they know we're here.
Oh, they know all right. This is how we'll play it. I'll handle the Gatlin. You get the wagon in place, as close as you can without exposing yourself. There's a place to turn the team just before the curve.
And then what?
Then I start cranking and clear the roadblock.
And the gangs come on the run?
Probably. But they're gonna run right into our fire. You have a better idea?
Jerry smiled and shook his bandaged head.
Can't say as I do. I'll get the wagon in place.
I'll be at the curve with a rifle. Soon as they hear you, they'll get ready to open fire. Just as soon as I get a target, I'll drop him.
Sounds good to me.
Good luck, Jerry.
Jerry nodded his head and climbed into the wagon. Frank walked back to the curve and got into position. A lookout high above probably warned the guards. There was no one in sight. As he waited for Jerry to get into place, Frank wondered if the 4 men who ambushed Viv and him that sunny afternoon were part of the 2 gangs. He didn't think they were. Dutton's men, he was sure. Another man to deal with as soon as he got the road opened. And he would get the road open. Frank did not have any doubts about that. Doubts about his ability to deal with any situation did not plague him. He just bulled ahead and got it done. Jerry got the wagon into position and unhitched the team, leading them to safety, then came back and removed the cases of dynamite and caps, stashing them behind some rocks, well out of the line of fire. He returned to crouch beside the wagon, rifle in hand.
Ready for the dance?
Play the fiddle, Frank. It's your tune.
Frank started cranking, the lead flying from the hand-cranked machine gun. The heavy slugs tore into the wagons, knocking great chunks from the sideboards.
I thought you said both them Gatlins was ruined.
Yeah, damn sure don't sound like it to me.
Frank gave the outlaws half a magazine and got lucky this time. A man staggered out, both hands holding his torn-up belly. He collapsed on the rocky road, dead.
Jesse's dead!
I seen him, you idiot! I ain't blind!
No, you're just stupid! That there is Frank Morgan! And I told you he wasn't gonna take this lying down!
If you want your share of that money in the bank, you shut your mouth and hold this here road!
I want me some of them women in the town!
I got me a real powerful yearning.
Frank gave the outlaws another half magazine, ending conversation on their side for a few minutes. While Frank was changing out the magazine, Jerry's rifle cracked, and an outlaw screamed and fell to the hard road, one leg broken. The .44-40 slug busted his knee. Moaning in pain, the man dragged himself out of sight behind some rocks. Hundreds of feet above the road, some of the outlaw gang began hurling large rocks down, but the top of the ridge angled outward, and rocks hit nowhere near the wagon. The outlaws quickly gave up their rock throwing. For a few moments, the siege became quiet, both sides apparently at an impasse. Jerry edged closer to Frank.
How are we going to get the dynamite down to the blockade? We sure can't toss it down there. It's too far.
I've been studying on that, Jerry. I think we'll use a spare wheel off the wagon.
A wheel?
Yeah, it's a gentle slope down to the blockade, and the road is fairly smooth. We'll tie the charge to the wheel, light it, and roll it down there.
And if it falls over, rolls off the edge before it gets there?
There are four more wheels on the wagon, and we got lots of dynamite. The trick is going to be cutting the fuse the right length.
I'll get the wheel. You handle the charges. Me and Dynamite made a bargain a long time back. It leaves me alone, and I do the same for it.
Frank smiled. He was an experienced hand with dynamite. He'd learned to be just as careful with the caps as with the charges. He'd seen men lose fingers, hands, and entire arms after getting careless while capping dynamite. Frank tied together a dozen sticks of explosives and carefully capped the lethal bundle. Jerry rolled the big wheel up and squatted down, watching while Frank cut and inserted the fuse. Then Frank secured the charge to the wheel with a cord and looked at his deputy.
You ready?
If that's a fast-burning fuse, we're in trouble.
We'll know soon, won't we?
You don't know?
Nope. You got the dynamite and fuses, didn't you ask?
Afraid not.
Frank struck a match and lit the fuse.
Roll it, Jerry.
Jerry was only too happy to start the wheel rolling. He breathed a sigh of relief as the wheel's momentum carried it away. The heavy wheel bounced and wobbled down the gentle slope, the fuse sputtering and sparking as it rolled.
Get the hell out of here! That's dynamite coming our way! Shoot the wheel and stop it! You shoot the goddamn thing, Luke! I'm out of here!
For a few seconds, it looked as though the wheel was going to topple over before it reached the blockade. Then it straightened up and picked up speed, rolling true. At the blockade, outlaws were scrambling to get clear. They were running, slipping, and sliding. The wheel ran into a wagon and lodged under the wagon bed for a few seconds. The explosion sent bits and pieces of the wagon flying in all directions and lifted the second wagon up and over the edge of the road. The chain across the road broke and fell to the ground. When the dust settled, the road was clear. Several of the outlaws got caught in the carnage. There were three men sprawled unconscious on the ground, one of them clearly dead, his neck twisted at an impossible angle after smashing against the cliff.
Jesus! How many sticks did you lash together, Frank?
12.
Warn me next time, will you?
Jerry cut his eyes to Frank and shook his head in awe.
Hope there won't be a next time.
This ain't over, Frank! You son of a bitch!
Vic Van Bergen. I recognize the voice.
We'll meet again, you sorry son! You can count on that!
And there goes double in spades for me, Morgan!
Ned Pine. It's over here, Jer. They're making their brags and threats now.
Watch your ass in town, Morgan! It ain't over by a long shot!
He's telling you they got men in town waiting for you, Frank.
Sure. Big Bob Mallory will be back, and Kid Moran. Several others, I'm sure.
The lawmen waited on the road for several minutes more, but there was no more yelling from the top of the ridge. The Van Bergen and Pine gangs pulled out. Frank and Jerry made their way cautiously down to the now wrecked blockade. Two of the outlaws were dead, one with a clearly broken neck, the other with a massive head wound caused by the fallen debris. The others were gone.
I'll hook up the team. Bring the wagon down and we'll tote the dead back. Might be a reward on them.
You're learning. I'll start clearing away some of this junk.
Frank?
Yeah?
Pine and Van Bergen knew they couldn't keep this road closed. Why'd they even try?
I think they were counting on us being dead. Our coming out alive put a kink in their plans.
You're really gonna have to watch your back careful in town now, Frank.
I've been doing that for many years. It's as automatic for me as breathing. Come on, let's get these bodies loaded up and get back to town.
Vivian was in a coma. Dr. Bracken told Frank she might linger for hours, even days. There was just no way to tell. The two dead outlaws were both wanted, with prices on their heads. They both carried identification, a lucky break for the lawmen. Frank would wire the states where they were wanted as soon as the telegraph wires were repaired. Frank filled out his daily report in the jail journal, then went on a walking inspection of the town. The main street was still a mess. The bodies of the dead had been carried off, and the wounded were in makeshift hospitals. The undertaker stacked bodies all over the place, overflowing out into the alley behind his parlor. There was just no time to embalm them all, nor did Malone have enough supplies to do so. The funerals were starting as soon as carpenters could knock together caskets. Some of the caskets were tiny. It was heartbreaking work. Frank tried to talk with Conrad, but he refused to see him. After Frank tried twice and was rebuffed both times, he decided to leave his son alone. Frank would be in town and available when or if the young man wanted to talk. Kid Moran and Big Bob Mallory were back in town. They were doing nothing to help out, just sitting and watching as the town struggled to pull itself out of the wreckage and cope with the heavy loss of life. Frank didn't push the pair. There had been enough killing. But he knew they were there for a showdown. It was just a matter of time. With the kid, it was an ego thing. Kid Moran wanted a reputation. Frank still wasn't certain who was paying Big Bob, but Charles Dutton was at the top of his list. Dutton was Conrad's shadow that day, all concern and sorrow and sympathy, and the young man was certainly receptive. Frank couldn't blame the boy. Conrad didn't have any idea what was going on. Apparently, Vivian never got around to talking with her son about her deep and dark feelings concerning Dutton.
Now it's too late. Too late for a lot of things.
He was tired and taking a break, sitting on the bench outside the marshal's office, having a cup of coffee. Late afternoon shadows crept about the streets of the mountain town, creating little pockets of darkness in hidden corners. This was one of Frank's favorite times of the day, when dusk reached out to slowly melt and mingle with sunlight. But on this day of tragedy, he was filled with emotions, a hard sense of loss, a feeling of impending doom, a sense his time in the mining town was nearly over. Other emotions were strong, but not yet clear. One of the emotions was familiar, the feeling he had ruined his life beyond salvage. Frank was a middle-aged man with a dubious past and not much of a future, and damned if he knew how he could change it. The voice of Dr. Bracken broke into his thoughts.
You mind some company, Marshal?
Not at all, Doc. Glad for it. Might improve my disposition.
Bracken looked at the cup in Frank's hand.
That coffee drinkable?
You bet. Hot and fresh. I'll get you a cup.
Doc Bracken put a hand on his shoulder.
Sit still. I'll get it.
He walked into the office. A moment later, a mug of coffee in his hand, Bracken sat down on the bench.
You were deep in thought, Marshal. Your face a study in emotion. Anything you want to talk about?
Not really, Doc. Guess I was just sitting here, sort of feeling sorry for myself.
You do that often?
Oh, not very often, Doc. Looking over the wreckage of this town brought it on, I suppose.
That and Mrs. Browning.
Yeah, that too.
Frank, the West is still a small place, speaking in terms of population. Hell, man. Half the town knew that you and Vivian Browning, Henson, were once married. Many of those knew old man Henson trumped up some false charges against you, and you had to leave. The story was all over the West back then. Newcomers, Johnny-come-latelys don't know it, but we old-timers do. I've had people today in the midst of all this tragedy tell me it's admirable how well you're holding up. Most of the people here in town, the regulars, the permanent residents, why, they like you, Frank. They found all your dark reputation as pure bunk. For whatever it's worth, the town is behind you.
Doc, I'm gonna hunt down that gang, every member, and I'm gonna kill them, all of them. My reputation is about to get a lot darker.
Only one man was cranking that Gatling gun, Frank.
But they were all involved, and none of them tried to stop that one man.
I can't argue that point.
Viv and me, Doc, we were picking up the pieces. We were gonna start all over again. Move to California, maybe, where a few people have heard of me.
That got Frank a quick, sharp look from Doc Bracken. Frank Morgan still didn't realize most people over the age of 8 knew of him. He didn't know there were dozens and dozens of newspaper articles written about him. People knew about Frank Morgan's exploits from coast to coast and border to border. Now many in the press were beginning to call him the last gunfighter. Frank Morgan, the last gunfighter.
All that's gone up in a few minutes of gun smoke. Vivian is lying in a coma, dying.
Frank caught himself, but not before Doc Bracken picked up on the hesitation.
Her son won't speak to me. He blames me for all that's happened. Hell, maybe he's right. Not entirely, but partly. I accept it. What choice do I have?
That's nonsense, Frank. She got caught in the line of fire. That's what happened.
You don't know the whole story, Doc. And it's best you never do.
Yeah. If you say so, Frank. Good. I needed that. It's been a long day. And it's going to be an even longer night.
I'm sure.
Jerry walked up, a toothpick in his mouth.
Doc, Frank, you better go put on the feed bag. Angie's laid out quite a spread at the cafe.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I am hungry. Doc, how about you?
In a little while, I want to check on a couple of patients first.
Frank and Jerry watched Doc head off before Jerry spoke.
Big Bob Mallory was seen leaving the hotel about 15 minutes ago, toting his rifle.
It's about time for the showdown, then. I've been feeling it coming for several hours. Where's Kid Moran?
Disappeared. I looked around, he was nowhere to be seen. Come on, I'll have a coffee while you eat.
Not looking a gunfight in the eyes, Jer. Changed my mind. Big meal slows you down. I'll eat later. Providing I can still eat, that is.
With Jerry walking a dozen yards behind him, carrying a rifle and covering his back, Frank strolled to the cafe. The front windows were knocked out and boarded up, but the horrible events of the day did not affect the quality of food. The delicious odors drifting out into the street made Frank's mouth water, bringing home the fact he had not eaten all day. But he did not want to eat a large meal, then have to face a very fast gun slick. And Kid Moran was very fast. Frank settled for a piece of pie with his cup of coffee. Then he had a cigarette with his second cup in the Silver Spoon Cafe. He was stubbing out the cigarette when Jerry came in and took a seat.
Kid Moran's waiting for you, Frank. He's standing on the corner. He's got a third pistol shoved in his gun belt.
He must be figuring I'm going to be hard to put down.
Frank rolled another smoke.
Don't forget, he usually misses his first shot.
Yeah, sometimes he doesn't. Always expect the unexpected in these things, Jerry.
I'll never have a stand-up hook-and-draw fight, Frank. I know better. I'm as slow as cold molasses.
I hope you never do, Jerry.
Frank, let you and me take him alive. We'll get a couple of greeners from the office and take him that way. How about it?
It wouldn't work.
Why?
He'd fight, and we'd both run the risk of getting plugged. What he's calling for right now is still legal out here. Probably will be for some years to come. You seen Big Bob anywhere?
No. It smells like a setup to me, Frank.
The kid drawing me out and Big Bob shooting me in the back? No, I don't think so. Bob Mallory works alone. Always has.
There's always a first time.
No, kid's looking for a reputation. and Bob is getting paid by somebody. Probably Dutton, to kill me.
Frank paused in his lifting of his coffee cup.
Maybe it's Conrad he's after. Jared, go check on Conrad. Keep an eye on him for me, will you?
If you order me to do so, Frank, I will.
Do I have to order it done?
No, of course not. I'm gone.
Frank finished his coffee and stood up, slipping the hammer thong off his .45. Angie was watching and frowned.
Frank, isn't there another way?
No, Angie, there isn't. Not with the kid. He wants a reputation.
He's lightning fast.
I'm no tenderfoot, Angie.
Of course you're not. I didn't mean to imply...
Frank held up a hand.
I know what you meant, Angie. Keep the coffee hot, will you?
Just for you and Jerry. And I'll have some supper for you, too.
Frank picked up his hat, settled it on his head, and stepped out of the cafe. He looked to his left. There was the kid, waiting at the end of the block.
Might as well get this over with one way or the other.
He touched the brim of his hat in a salute to the kid, a signal he was ready, and stepped off the boardwalk into the street. Kid Moran did the same. The word spread about the pending gunfight. The main street was deserted of carpenters and other workmen. In only a few more years, stand-up, hook-and-draw showdowns such as this would be mostly a thing of the past. But for now, it was still legal in most small towns in the West.